giving and some things that all of us need to know about giving and our relationship to material things. As I pointed out, I noticed that our giving has not been what it should have been this year. We have slacked off. We averaged, I believe, over $2,200 a week last year. And we are engaged in a very good work, and men are being supported, and we are doing many things that are good with the money here. And this is a good, sound congregation doing a good work and means a whole lot as we are over here in the edge of Bullitt County. But the influence this congregation has in this whole area for good, we need to understand that. This is a good, sound congregation where the gospel can be preached in its fullness. And brethren, the influence of this congregation has been felt. It has been felt in the Louisville area. It has been felt in Bullitt County. It most certainly has. And as I get ready to leave here, I'm better able to see and get feedback and the influence that we have had and the influence you will continue to have as you stand for the truth. And you need to understand that. This work needs to continue and grow, and will grow if everybody will do his part. And part of our responsibility, of course, is financial. And this is very, very important. We need to see our individual responsibility from this standpoint to give and to support the kingdom. Now, tonight I want to pick up, I want to look at principles now. These are things we've all studied over and over, but we need our minds renewed. I want to look at principles governing our giving. We are to give bountifully. You remember the Apostle Paul said in 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, and the 9th chapter, rather, and looking down to about the 6th verse, he says, "But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully." Now, what has the Lord told us? He says, if we give sparingly, how will we reap sparingly? If we give bountifully, so bountifully, then we will reap bountifully. How? In every area of our lives, in our spiritual lives, we will grow if we give. And we must give according to what we have. Back in the 8th chapter and verse 12, he says, "For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not." Now, the Lord does not expect something out of me that I do not have, but he does expect me to give my proportionate part of what I do have. You remember, the Lord, he watched how they gave. He said over against the treasury in the 12th chapter of the book of Mark, and beginning with about verse 41, the record says, "And Jesus said over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much, and there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and said unto them, Verily I say unto you, that this poor widow has cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in out of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living." Now, the Lord didn't rebuke her for that. She was completely dependent upon the Lord. She didn't cast in out of her abundance. And the Lord said, as he observed all the others, as they cast into the treasury, They cast in out of the abundance. They made no sacrifice. This widow made a sacrifice. And our giving ought to be a cheerful sacrifice. We ought to sacrifice for the cause of the Lord. We sacrifice for everything else. You know, if we want a new car, what do? We'll sacrifice for it. We want a better home, we'll sacrifice for it. We want better clothes, we'll sacrifice for it. We'll sign a note for everything else we want. Have you ever heard of brethren saying, well, I think I'll sign a note this year so I can give more money because there's a preacher over yonder that needs help? Think about it. Do we even think in these areas? Sacrifice. The kingdom needs to be on our mind. The importance of spreading the gospel, recognizing that as we give, the Lord expects us to give what we have. And, you know, the churches of Macedonia, they even went beyond what they were able to do. He said in 2 Corinthians 8, he says, moreover, brethren, we do you to wit or to know the grace of God bestowed upon the churches of Macedonia. How that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power, or their ability is the idea, I bear record, yea, beyond their power, they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we should receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And this they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Now he said these brethren had given themselves first to the Lord, and then he said they were able to give even beyond what the Apostle Paul expected out of them. They sacrificed. The Lord expects us to give according to what we have. Sometimes the only thing we give is out of our abundance. And we do have an abundance in this nation. All of us. We may look at ourselves and say, well, you know, we're not. Yes, we are. We're all doing well. And as I pointed out this morning, the danger of material things. The Lord has blessed us. He put these things into our hands. We're stewards of them. And I tried to emphasize that this morning. But part of that stewardship is learning to use this wealth into His service. And we must have, as he points out here in this same verse, in 2 Corinthians 8:12, we must have a willing mind. The Lord does not want us to give out of a mind that's not willing. That doesn't mean we don't stand under condemnation. Some fellow said, well, we're to give cheerfully, and I can't give that away, so I don't give. No. The point of it is we'd better learn to have a willing mind. We'd better learn to give cheerfully. He says, for if there first be a willing mind, you see, a willing mind. And that shows that we have to have some teaching along this line. We have to do some meditating on what all this is about. And we have to see the good that is done, a willing mind. And then we must be motivated by love. Down in verse 24 of this 2 Corinthians 8, he says, wherefore show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. Was he point out that whenever we give, this is proof of our love. Love motivates us to give. And then we must give upon a regular basis. Coming back to 1 Corinthians 16, he says, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God has prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. So we see then that we are to gather up the money that is needed regularly upon the first day of the week, upon the first day of every week, every member of the church is to purpose in his heart to lay aside a proportionate part of his income to defray the expenses of the kingdom. And what we need to recognize, we are citizens in the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven here on earth, to carry out its work, it must have money. And each citizen must recognize his responsibility. That's like being a citizen of the United States. Every one of us, we filed our income tax April the 15th. Why? Well, we knew that the IRS would be after us. It'd be a violation of the law. And also, we understood the fact that we're going to ride on good roads, that we're going to have all the services and everything that we have, we're going to have to be taxed. Now, in the kingdom of Christ, if this great work is to go on, who is to carry it on? The citizens of the kingdom. And so, we are to give on a regular basis. And when we give on a regular basis, then it is in the treasury to carry on the work. And as needs arise, it is there to do the work. We're not to give grudgingly. As Paul goes on in the 2 Corinthians letter to say, in 2 Corinthians 9:7, let every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly. Now, we have to work on our hearts, you see. Not begrudging what we put in, but we ought to do it cheerfully, he says, not of necessity. In other words, the Lord does not want us to do it under compulsion, but he wants us to get to the place where we can do it out of a willing heart, do it cheerfully, and we can do it because we love his cause. We love his cause. We're able to see what needs to be done. And we have great joy in the fact that we are partakers in this great work. We're partakers with God. Now, you think about all the sacrifice that God has made. It took 4,000 years to unfold the scheme of redemption for man. When man first sinned, it took a period of education. That's what the Old Testament is. Bringing us to Jesus Christ to make us really see his redeeming sacrifice and to help us have an insight into what it's all about. And some of us still don't have the insight we ought to have. He did all of this to what? To redeem us. The sacrifice, the greatest sacrifice that could be made, the choice jewel of heaven, died that you and I might be saved, that we might enjoy the gospel. Now, you and I enjoy it. We enjoy the hope of eternal life. It is our responsibility to share this joy with other men. What is the means of sharing this joy? What I'm talking about, the giving of our means. We need to learn to appreciate the gospel. And the gospel as it's preached, we need to learn to appreciate men who preach the gospel. And the effect, not that the man is important, but what he does is important. That's what's emphasized. And the man cannot go forth and exercise the preaching of the gospel unless he's what? Stood behind by his brethren and supported. That's just the truth about it. And the more men we can get out there who are preaching the gospel, the more souls we're going to reach. We need to see that. Every member needs to see that. That causes us to be able to give cheerfully. All right? And we should not give out of vain glory. These, of course, are all of the wrong motives. In the 6th chapter of the book of Matthew, Jesus talks about this. He says, take heed that ye do not your alms before men to be seen of them. Otherwise, ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound the trumpet before thee as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest thine alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand hath done, and thy alms may be in secret, that thine alms may be in secret, rather, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. In other words, it's not wrong for somebody to know what you may be giving, but from the standpoint, if you make it known and you gloat about it, and that's the reason you give, that's for vain glory. And therefore, that would be sinful. All right, we should not be deceitful. You know, in the fifth chapter of the book of Acts, we find Ananias and Sapphira, and we find that they sold a possession, kept back part of the price. There's a lengthy reading. I'm not going to read it all. We're familiar with it, but they kept back part of the price. And then they gave and left the impression that they had given all. They were deceitful. What happened to them? They lost their lives. They were deceitful in their giving. When they put it into the common treasury, they're saying, Lord, this is all of it. It wasn't. Now I want you to think back with me. Whenever we put into the common treasury, what are we saying to the Lord? Now, he's observing it, just like he was, as I read in Mark 12. We're saying, Lord, this is my prosperity. This is my prosperity. Is it? Ask yourself, is it? Am I giving my proportionate part? Am I carrying my part of the load? We must not be deceitful. We must be liberal in our giving. Let's look again at the book of Romans. In the 12th chapter of the book of Romans, down in about verse 8, he says, he that exhorteth on exhortation, he says, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity, or the idea in some of the translations, which is the true idea, as it's translated, simplicity here, let him do it with liberality. I think the New King James says that, another translation. We are to be liberal in our giving. We're to give bountifully, liberally. All right? Another verse. Jesus said, if you'd look back with me to the book of Luke, in the 6th chapter of the book of Luke, and look down, if you will, to about verse 38. He says, give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure. Pressed down. Shaken together. Running over. What's he talking about? Giving bountifully. Shall men give into your bosom? For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. So as we began to look at the principles, how are we to give? We are to give liberally. We are, as I've already pointed out, we are to sacrifice in our giving. You remember Paul, as he wrote to the Romans, said in Romans 12:1, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. The Lord expects us to sacrifice. As we pointed out, we are to give as we have purpose. 2 Corinthians 9:7. This is something we're to plan ahead with. Not just wait till we get to the services, but plan out our giving. Plan out our giving at the beginning of the year. We can know from that standpoint, as we increase, then change our giving. We are to what? Purpose our giving. It's not just to be a haphazard thing. And as we pointed out, we must first give ourselves. The brethren at Macedonia, they first gave themselves. Now, let's look at what we give, we do not lose. You know, let's look at this principle as it's laid down. As we go back to the book of Mark, in the 10th chapter of the book of Mark, and look, if you will, to about verse 42, our Lord said, and Jesus called them to him and said unto them, let's see, I may have given you Matthew 10:42, I'm sorry, giving you the wrong book, 10:42, now notice what he says. And whosoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water, only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. Now what did Jesus say? Jesus said, if we give simply a drink of cold water, we won't lose our reward. Does the Lord pay attention to what we're doing from this aspect? He most certainly does. Let me call your attention to another passage, like in then the sixth chapter of the book of Hebrews in verse 10. He says, for God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, which ye have shown toward his name, in that ye have ministered to the saints and do minister. Now what did he say? He says, God's not unrighteous. He sees your work and labor of love. He sees even a drink of water you give. And he says, the man who does that will in no wise lose his reward. If we're so bountifully, he says in 2 Corinthians 9:6, we looked at that a while ago, we will reap bountifully. How? In every aspect of our lives, spiritually. Of course, as he goes on to say, we will continue to be able to give. Now, he's not teaching here what folks teach that, the seed faith, the more you give, the more you're going to become rich. That's not his principle here. But he does teach that if we make the sacrifice and we give, we shall be able to continue to give. Look on in that same text. If you look down to about verse of the ninth chapter of 2 Corinthians, you look down to about verse 8, he says, God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. What does he say? Well, you're not going to be depleted by giving. If you give and I give what we are able to give, God will continue to make us to be able to give what we're giving. That's right. Why? He's going to take care of us because he is going to see that the gospel is preached through us. That's what we need to recognize. The only money God has is our money. It's his to begin with. He put it in our hands. We're stewards. And a proportionate part belongs to him. Now, if he took 4,000 years to unfold the scheme of redemption, and then he brought his son into the earth, and there he was crucified on Calvary for us, and he inaugurated the church on the first Pentecost after the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and commissioned the apostles the Lord did to go into all the world to preach the gospel, and it is to be a perpetual thing till the end of the world. Do you not think he's going to not bless the members of Hebron Lane as they go forth to preach the gospel? It's a matter of your faith and my faith. Have we got enough faith in the Lord to turn loose of our material possessions, the proportionate part that belongs to the Lord, to defray the expenses of his kingdom after you've made all the sacrifice? Now, we must see that. I'm persuaded there are going to be a lot of good brethren that were good in many ways in hell because of what I'm talking about tonight. They were faithful to come to the services. They were faithful to do many things, but they lacked the rich young ruler. They loved their money so they were never able to depart from it. And it makes me sad as I think of some men. I think of an elder where I grew up. He was the stingiest fellow I believe I ever knew. He could squeeze a buffalo nickel nearly to the buffalo hollered. And every time you begin to talk about spending money, no, we can't do anything. Can't do anything. And some of those kind of elders have held the cause of the Lord back. They have spent the money like it was their personal money. And they not only have going to lose their soul, they have discouraged disciples and congregations. And I need to see this thing as it is, as the Lord has pictured it to us, and our responsibility, and recognize we will in no wise lose by giving. God will multiply the seed sown. Go on in the 2 Corinthians letter 9 and 10. He says, he that ministers seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food and multiply your seed sown and increase the fruit of your righteousness. We'll do that. The God of heaven will. Great blessings that come from our giving. Fruit will abound to our account. I've called your attention to that one this morning, but let's look at it again. As Paul wrote to the Philippians, in Philippians, the 4th chapter, in verse 17, as they supported him, Paul said that he was grateful for their support, and not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that may abound to your account. The Lord puts it to our account when we have fellowship with men who preach. You see, in this same letter, he has said in the 5th chapter, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. How did that take place? Through their support of Paul. For over 9 years, you've had fellowship with me. I can't claim credit personally for what I have done. We have worked together. Hebron Lane has preached. How? How do we preach? Well, all of you can't preach. And God didn't intend the women to preach publicly to begin with, you see. But every man can't preach. But how do we preach? We preach through an individual. The man who does the work of an evangelist. We preach. We have had fellowship, and all of the good that we have done, we all get it to our account. Every bit of it. That's the reason we need to be behind the men who preach, holding up their hands morally and financially, and it abounds back to our account. What we put in the cause, we do not lose. We are to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness in Matthew, the 6th chapter, in verse 33. He says, and all these things shall be added unto you. What do we learn from this? Blessings, spiritual and temporal, come out of our faithfulness in giving. That's what these verses emphasize to us. The God of heaven is pleased with our giving. Let's go to a passage back in the Hebrew letter. In Hebrews, the 13th chapter, if you will, look down to about verse 16. He says, to do good and to communicate, forget not. And for with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. And this is what he's talking about. He's talking about our material giving. And then we need to understand that what we give, we're laying up in store against the time to come. Go back to 1 Timothy 6 and 19. He says, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. I called your attention to that this morning, and what he's talking about is the use of material goods. He says, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy, that they do good, you see, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. Now, what does the Bible say? Use what we have in the service of the Lord, and what are we doing? Laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that you may lay hold on eternal life. Now, you may have the ability to make money more than the ordinary man. Well, recognize the great blessing that's in that. But again, recognize the great responsibility that's in that. You may not be able to preach the gospel. I can preach the gospel and you can make money. And you tie both of us together, and I'll tell you what we can do, we can reach a lot of souls. And that's what the Lord intended. But many times, now, I've never detected that in Hebron Lane, so don't think I'm talking about Hebron Lane. And if you do have this attitude, it doesn't come out, and so change it. But there's a lot of ugly attitudes toward preachers and the support of men. That's one thing that holds back the cause. We say, well, he's just preaching for money. Look at that. He wants money. He wants this. He wants that. Many brethren don't trust the preacher any further than I could throw an elephant. You see, with our ugly attitudes, what does it do? It affects this. Now, just because there's a few bad preachers, just like there's a few bad members, a few bad deacons, a few bad elders, that don't mean everybody's bad. That don't change the Lord's plan. You see. And we need to see his arrangement to carry the gospel to the world. And it's only when we see this that we are able to accomplish what the God of heaven intended to be accomplished. And you're making money is, when you use it right and learn to use it right, is just as important as the man who's doing the preaching. It takes both of them to carry the gospel to this world. Okay? Then there is the deceitfulness of riches. As we come back to the 13th chapter of the book of Matthew, the Lord warns us again there about the deceitfulness of riches can bring about our destruction. He says in verse 22 of Matthew 13, he also that receives seed among the thorns, as he says, is he that heareth the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. Now, what choked the word? The deceitfulness of riches. Now, this is a lesson we all need. Riches, they deceive us many times from the standpoint of the preoccupation they demand. You know, Paul warned about the man who just set his heart on being rich. Go back to 1 Timothy 6. Now, making money is competitive, and it requires a lot of concentration. Now, don't misunderstand me. There is a certain amount. I dealt with that this morning. We must work. We must be in business or something, and that will demand. But I'm talking about being this extraordinary involved, getting just covetous. Get $1 and you can't wait to get the next dollar. And when you begin to really make money, it becomes competitive and it requires a lot of concentration. And it will just nearly destroy a man. Now, I know a preacher in North Alabama where I'm going to go back. He's preached part-time all of his life. He's a very good man. Been a friend. I graduated from high school. But he's made scabs of money. No telling what he's worth. He's taught school. He didn't make money teaching school now. He made money in other endeavors. And some men have that ability. But he told me this, I guess, 11 years ago or 12. He said, Donald, once you begin to make money and get money, and then you begin to know how to make money, and you just get involved, and everything you touch then begins to turn to money. But he said, I'll tell you what it'll do. It'll destroy you spiritually. And he said, I tell you, I realized that. I just had to back off for my own good. And I thank God he had that kind of understanding. Now, we need to understand. Now, I know nothing about that. You know nothing about that. But that happens. Men do get to making money, get in position, get know how to wheel and deal, and it can be destructive. That's what he's warning about. This fellow told me, he recognized the signs and backed off before it did bring his destruction. And this, of course, is what Paul is warning about, as we put it out here in 1 Timothy the sixth chapter, when he says, "For they that will be rich, they fall into what? Temptation and a snare." The idea of a snare, out here, you snare a wild animal. You hide it. Before he knows it, you've caught him, you see. And that's what he's warning about. This is how deceitful riches are. "And into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown." See, that next word is drown. It's like a ship going down and everybody is destroyed. And he uses three figures. Then he says the love of money is the root. You see, that word root of all evil. It is at the top root. Now, as I say, the Lord has warned us about the deceitfulness of riches. And we have to learn. Riches are deceitful in the way that they affect our character, you see. This is what Paul is warning about here in 1 Timothy 6:17. When he says, "Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not what? High-minded." What will riches do? It will begin to affect your character. You'll begin to change. You won't be the same old fellow that wore the straw hat to the Christmas tree. You see, you'll change. Back when a fellow is poor, many times, you see, he gets along with everybody, and he has sympathy and empathizes with people. Then what happens? He gets money, he gets high-minded, and then he changes his attitude toward many things. "Now trust," he says, "in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy." So, here's what money will do for you. Money will give a man more recognition than he's ever had. Now you know that. Men of money are known. The more money you get, the wider you're known. You see, you can just think of Rockefeller, Donald Trump. I don't know just how much money he had, but he had enough to, got enough that he came in the news, and we see him all the time. What I'm trying to tell you is money causes men to have recognition. It does in a community. You recognize and know the moneyed men, right? Sure you do. You businessmen know who has money over in the Louisville area. Well, with the coming of this recognition, what can that do to my character? Inflate one's pride. That's what he just got through dealing with. It'll lift up a man. So you see, with money, it is not wrong to have money. What we're dealing with here is to not let it affect our character and learn how to use it. And so there is the danger, you see. And one with money will become less dependent upon God. That's what he points out. And that's the scary part of it. You know, the more money, you can go out here and you can just buy what you want. You've got the money in the bank. You've got the investment. You don't worry about those things. What does poor people do? Well, they have to depend upon God. They get on their knees several times a day, and they pray, and they ask, and they're dependent upon him. And the less dependent we become from this standpoint, the more damaging it is to us. So you can see, with wealth, there's a lot of dangers. And one becomes more harsh and demanding of others, the more money he gets. He gets where he can't understand. I can't understand other people. And so we need to understand that wealth is very deceptive. It can deceive a man. And that's what Jesus is warning us about. Riches are deceiving in the false values they create. The pursuit of money puts one in close and intimate contact with others who are very successfully financially. Now, once you make money, then the money people are going to get to know you. That's the way it works. Now, folks need to understand that. You see, that's the reason the Lord's given us all of these learnings, not long to have it, but learn the power of it, learn the dangers of it, learn how to use it, let it not become the thing that destroys our soul. And so when we began to then associate with this crowd, if you've got money, one's newfound friends, he begins to admire them, and he begins to say, these are people who are quick, they're people who are intelligent, they are people who have a broad grasp of many things. Go read the 73rd Psalm. That'll help you along some of these lines. So to stay up with these people, what happens to many people? Their values change. See, that's what Jesus is warning about. Riches are deceitful in the effect that they have upon our family. You don't have to be rich from the standpoint of just having all you want to affect our families. We have affected our families, all of us, to one degree or the other, with the materialism in which we live. Making money demands a lot of time, as we've stated. And then when we get money, many times, what have we done with that money? We've destroyed our children. That's right. We've destroyed their incentive to work. Now, many children will never be able to make the money their parents have made. Now, you know who the fault is, and many times, it is the parents. Why? Because they never had money, they made money, and their idea was, I'll give him or her what I never had. And what did you do? You killed every incentive in the child. And you never taught the value of money and how to handle money and things of this nature. The Bible has a lot to say along these lines. It's important that you and I learn these truths. It's important that we learn our relationship to material things. It's important that we learn our relationship to them in relationship to the kingdom. And if there's one area probably we have not addressed and learned and taught enough, it's in this area. You go to places, you look at the board, and you say, well, that looks pretty good. You go some places, and 2,000, 3,000. But do you really think this day and time, many times, that really touches the wealth of that church? If you don't believe it, you get your calculator, you folks are good with it, and you just go out and you figure up the price of the cars that are on this parking lot or any other parking lot on Sunday morning. Then you find out how many cars are sitting at home in garages, and you compute that. And then you compute the wealth from the standpoint of the equity that's in the homes and other things. Now, you just figure out the value of the average congregation.
Visiting with us this morning, we're glad to have you and invite you to come back and be with us as you have opportunity. This morning and tonight, I want to talk about some things that we all need to know about our giving. And